Clerk will call the roll. Atkinson.
Beyer.
Brown.
Brown,
Burdick. Burdick, Carter. Carter, Castillo. Castillo, Clarno. Corcoran. Corcoran, Courtney. Courtney, Deckert. Deckert, Dukes. Dukes, Duncan. Farioli. Farioli, Fisher. George. Gordley. Gordley, Hannon. Harper. Hartung. Meserly. Metzger. Metzger, Miller. Minnis. Minnis, Morissette. Morissette, Nelson. Nelson, Shields. Shields, Star. Tro. Tro, Yee. Yee, President Erfler.
A quorum being present, we present the colors. Senator Metzger will lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our invocation this morning will be by Senator Tom Hartung.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning. Nice to see you all, even under these circumstances. Today I'd like to share with you again the prayer offered by Reverend Peter Marshall, chaplain to the U.S. Senate, back in 1948. Let us pray. O God of grace and God of glory, when we resent having so many choices to make, may we remember that good character is the habit of choosing right from wrong. Help us as a nation to see that our strongest defense lies back in home and school and church, where is built the character that gives free people the power to win their freedom and to hold it. May we never forget that it is only under God that this nation or any nation can be free. And when we have learned well this lesson, then shall we have for export more than money, even the faith and idealism for which all who love liberty will be willing to live. Amen.
Thank you, Senator. Folks, we're going to try to get this done as quickly as we can, or as the best we can. And I'd appreciate the debate. If there's going to be debate, I think that's fine. But I would want to be sure and remark that we need to keep our remarks fair and honest, and certainly don't want to impugn anybody's motives. So with that in mind, the clerk will read the proclamation from the governor.
Also, the governor of the state of Oregon, a proclamation. Whereas I, John A. Kitzhaber, governor of the state of Oregon, have exercised my constitutional prerogative to veto Senate Bill 1022, House Bill 4056, and House Bill 4064, which were passed by the Legislative Assembly in the 2002 third special session. And whereas under Article 5, Section 15B of the Oregon Constitution, both chambers of the Legislative Assembly constitutionally may override my veto of those bills with two-thirds vote of the members present. And whereas a full and beneficial debate about balancing the state budget with sustainable revenue for operations of public schools cannot realistically occur until the Legislative Assembly has the opportunity to consider and take action on those vetoes. Now, therefore, I, John A. Kitzhaber, Governor of the State of Oregon, pursuant to Article 5, Section 12 of the Oregon Constitution, hereby proclaim Friday, August 16, 2002 at 9 o'clock a.m. to be the convening of the Oregon Legislative Assembly for the purposes of considering whether to override the veto of Senate Bill 1022, House Bill 4056, and House Bill 4064, and witness whereof I herein to set my hand to cause the great seal of the State of Oregon to be affixed, done at the capital of the City of Salem, State of Oregon, this day, August 7, 2002, signed, John A. Kitzhaber.
Recognize Senator Harper.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the 2002 third special session Senate rules as amended be adopted as the Senate rules for this fourth special session of the 71st Legislative Assembly.
Senator Harper moves that the 2002 third special session Senate rules be as amended be adopted by the Senate rules for this fourth special session of the 71st Legislative Assembly. To your motion.
Thank you, members. We got, Judy emailed this to everybody. We got it. All we did was a one-line change on page one where we scratched out third and changed it to as required.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion?
That's a joke.
I could tell that.
Nobody was laughing. It made me nervous.
You should be. If not, the question is on the adoption of the fourth special session rules. All those in favor answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson. Beyer. Brown. Burdick. Burdick Carter. Carter Castillo. Clarno. Clarno. Corcoran. Courtney. Deckert. Dukes. Duncan. Ferrioli. Fisher. George. Gordley. Hannon.
Aye.
Harper.
Aye.
Hartung.
Aye.
Meserly.
Aye.
Metzger.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Minnis.
Aye.
Morissette.
Aye.
Nelson. Shields.
Aye.
Starr.
Aye.
Trow. Yee.
Aye.
President Durfler. Not answering. Burdick.
Aye.
Carter.
Aye.
Excused. Gordley. Nelson. 28 ayes.
Motion is carried. The Secretary of the Senate is directed to notify the Governor and the House of Representatives that the Senate has completed the organization and is ready for business on the fourth special session of the 71st Legislative Assembly. I've made the following fourth special session committee assignments effective immediately. The Senate Special Committee on Government Affairs, Senator Bev Clarno, Chair, Senator Jason Atkinson, Senator Mei Yi. Courtesies of the Senate. Remonstrances. Excuse me. Senator Brown, I haven't seen you run for 2 or 3 weeks already.
Thank you, Mr. President. I've been waiting all morning to do courtesies, and of course, when the time came, I missed the opportune moment. I would ask that you extend courtesies to one of our interns for the summer. Her name is Melissa Norton. She's a senior at Willamette, and she is from San Diego, and she's here going to school, and she has two favorite sports that I know of, tennis and volleyball. And I think she was hoping to be an intern during the interim. Unfortunately, or fortunately, we're in session today. So I would ask the courtesies be extended, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. And courtesies are extended. And thank you for being here. Recognize Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. As is my habit, I'll take credit for the good work of Paul Warner and legislative fiscal colleagues. On your desk, you have a single sheet that says September gap scenarios. And what this does is it shows us the effects of us sustaining both Senate Bill 1022 and sustaining House Bill 4056, the governor's veto being sustained, scenario B, overriding Senate Bill 1022, sustaining House Bill 4056, scenario C, overriding both of the bills, and scenario D, sustaining Senate Bill 1022 and overriding House Bill 4056. In the interest of communicating what are the facts, Mr. President, these have been distributed to the members' desks. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Senator. We're still in courtesies. Senator Deckert.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to ask for courtesies to the Senate be extended to my mother, who is with me today. I don't know your favorite sports. I thought I might include them. I think they might be tennis and hiking. But just want to welcome my mother and thank her for having me and thank her for being a great mother.
Mrs. Deckert, you're welcome to be here. We extend courtesies, and we also thank you for having him. Recognize Senator Clarno.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to introduce my son on the side aisle with his brother, Randy, Don Hildebrand, who's a wheat farmer in Sherman County, also owner of a picture rock line called Biggs Jasper. And at my desk is my granddaughter, who's in the fifth grade at Vern Patrick School in Redmond, Oregon. And she loves horses and is here today to learn about government. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And courtesies are extended to both your sons and your granddaughter. And we appreciate them being here today. Remonstrances. Messages. The clerk will read the message from the Secretary of State.
To President Durfler, the fourth special session of the 71st Legislative Assembly will take place August 16, 2002. Therefore, and as provided by Section 15B, Article 5, Constitution of Oregon, we place before your honorable body the measures enacted by the 71st Legislative Assembly of the State of Oregon, June 12, 2002, third special session, which were vetoed by Governor Kitzhaber following signed aye to wit and enrolled Senate Bill 1022. Enclosed, you will find the above bills and a copy of Governor Kitzhaber's veto message for each. My best, Bill Bradbury, Secretary of State.
Without objections, we're going to revert back to courtesies, if we may, because we have a couple birthdays. And Senator Farioli, do you wish to announce those? And And Senator Carter, is she here? She's going to help Ted lead us on a happy birthday for the members, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Teresa Van Winkle of our staff is having a birthday today, and we wanted just to acknowledge her. Also, a member of the Senate is having a birthday today. That would be Senator Metzger. So I'd like to ask all of the colleagues to join us in wishing and singing to Senator Metzger and Teresa Van Winkle the birthday.
Senator Castillo has one today.
Oh, and Senator Castillo, I'm informed, also has crashed over the hill and had a birthday in the interim 2 days ago. Happy birthday, Senator Castillo. And I'll ask my good colleague to help me sing the happy birthday to all three of these. And I wonder how we're going to do all three, but we'll just do it. Are we ready?
We're ready.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear colleague. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
I hope you noticed that during that ceremony, I created a courtesy by not by turning my microphone off. If there's no objections, the Senate will dispense with the reading of the veto message as pertinent information has been placed on your desk. The message in its entirety shall be recorded in the journal, so ordered. Reports from conference committees, reports to special committees, propositions and motions, recognized Senator Harper.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that in compliance with Article 4, Section 19 of the Oregon Constitution and notwithstanding any provision of the fourth special session Senate rules for the 71st Legislative Assembly, the requirement that on its final passage each bill shall be read section by section be suspended, and that the requirement that every bill shall be read by title only on three several days in each House be suspended for the duration of this fourth special session.
Senator Harper moves that in compliance with Article 4, Section 19 of the Oregon Constitution, and notwithstanding any provisions of the Fourth Special Session Senate Rules for the 71st Legislative Assembly, that the requirement on its final passage each bill shall be read section by section be suspended, and that the requirement that every bill shall be read by title only on three several days in each House to be suspended for the duration of the fourth special session. Senator Harper, to your motion.
To help expedite the special session.
Thank you, Senator. The question before the Senate is on the suspension of constitutional provisions. All those in favor answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Beyer. Brown. Burdick. Carter, Castillo, Clarno, Corcoran, Courtney, Deckert, Dukes, Duncan, Ferrioli, Fisher, George, Gordley, Hannon, Harper, Hartung, Meserly, Metzger, Miller, Minnis, Morissette, Nelson, Shields, Starr, Trow, Yee, Atkinson, President Erfler. Excused, Gordley, Nelson, 28 ayes.
Motion is carried. Recognized Senator Hannon.
Yes, Mr. President, I would move that the vetoed Senate Bill 1022 be repassed, notwithstanding the governor's veto.
Senator Hannon moves that Senate Bill 1022 be repassed, notwithstanding the governor's veto. To your motion.
Mr. President, members, for several days I've struggled with what I was going to say here today, and I guess we're here for one reason, and that is to override a veto that was issued by a former colleague who's now governor. And I don't make my comments here today lightly, because I feel somewhat very mixed emotions that we are here for this reason. Back in April, I met with the governor, his chief of staff, the good Democratic senator from Salem, myself, and we put up on the bulletin board there in the governor's office a scenario of items that would be used to balance the budget on a third special session. This is one of the items that was put up there on that board. And if at the time, certainly the governor had had some strong reservations or strong concerns, it would have been more appealing to all of us had he issued his concern at that time rather than advocating this as part of the solution. And now today, we're here to override a veto. And as I stated in the special session in the last one that we had, the proposals that we have are probably far from being perfect. I would rather be here, as I said then, and I would reemphasize now, that we were voting on a referral of a sales tax, value-added tax, business occupation tax, I don't care what you want to call it, to address the school funding issue. But this is not that measure. We don't have it before us. We have this measure that balances out an attempt to address the shortfall of schools and community colleges. If this veto is allowed to remain, it creates a very difficult funding shortage for schools that are 2.5 weeks away from opening up. 500,000 children, Oregon children, are going to be at the front door asking to be admitted to our public school system. And in essence, this veto holds them hostage. This veto says that if we don't override it, the schools may start shortly after Labor Day, but they only might run for 7 or 8 months and then have to recess or adjourn for the summer because of lack of funding. Community colleges, likewise, are also caught in this situation where they stepped forward and they offered an alternative that we would move the budgeting issue as we did for K through 12 on the same level of funding for community colleges. If this veto is allowed to stand, it has about a $56 million fiscal impact for community colleges in this state, which is very, very devastating at a time when we're in a deep recession in this state. Unemployment is high, one of the highest in the nation, and people are looking to find alternative education to enhance their life, to be able to be gainfully employed again. So having said all that, these issues are before us in one bill, and it's an override. My preference today would probably be not to be here in overriding a veto of a good friend and a colleague, a former colleague in the Senate. But I feel totally frustrated that I have to pose the question to my good friend, the governor, about where have you been for the last 9 months when we were debating this issue, if you had such strong reservations. Where have you been for the last 8 years? If we get up here to the 11th hour, the 59th minute, the 45th second, and school's on the verge of opening or closing. And I have to pose that same question to you, my colleagues. Where have we been? Since Measure 5 was enacted, the public has been told the sky is falling, the sky is falling. We've used one Band-Aid after another to put on in place of a tourniquet to stop the bleeding. We put a Band-Aid on. This is another Band-Aid because we lack the resources of having a bill before us. The last few days I've been bombarded with emails and phone calls and messages from constituents and people around the state saying, why don't you do the right thing and stand up and fund schools like you should rather than trying to override the governor's veto? I would submit that we are a bicameral legislature, not a unicameral legislature. The taxing measure has to commence in the House. We don't have that measure before us. If we had it, I would certainly strongly advocate that we look at it rather than considering this. But we don't have it. There's a whole bunch of scenarios that have led us to this day. And it's before us now to decide if we're going to override the governor's veto. There's too much at stake, folks. We've had our opportunities. We have not been successful. The governor and the legislature. We're now up here to the 11th hour, the 59th minute, and the 45th second. And there is no alternative. The alternative before us is to override a veto here today or to sustain the veto and seriously impact K-12 and community colleges and the citizens of this state. Is it a position I envy? Absolutely not. And I don't think there's any one of you in this room sharing that envy as well. But I'm asking you today to join with me in a very difficult decision, and that is to override the executive decision to veto a bill. Let's not hold our children hostage in this state. Let's not hold them accountable for our lack of action. Let's fund schools, regardless of how precarious it might be. But let's do something right for a change rather than trying to use gimmicks. It's not my preference. It's not my number one issue here today. But I'm willing to stand up and vote to override. And I ask you to join with me as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? Recognize Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Mr. President. I agree with my good colleague from Ashland that we shouldn't use gimmicks and we should do something right for a change. I disagree that we don't have the resources. We do have the resources. What we lack is courage. This is a turning point. We've always put Band-Aids on the problem. And we've always sent the wrong message that it's okay. We'll fix it. We'll figure out some goofy way to make it right. And I think we've come to the cliff. I would vote to increase the income tax on people over $200,000 a year. I would increase the tax on corporations to make them equal with individuals. I would vote to institute a gross receipts tax dedicated entirely to education. I would vote to put in a sales tax, which is not regressive. I would vote to put in a beer wine tax. Take a look at that piece that was put out the other day about all of us who got money from the beer wine industry and how they're unapproachable. They're protected by their stealth lobbyist. There are many ways that we can solve this problem. And I think that if we do one more Band-Aid and send this message that things are going to be okay and, oh, poor us, oh, we hate to do this, we really hate to do it, but we're going to do it anyway because things are going to be okay. I think that's ridiculous. So I would appeal to courage. Let's sustain the veto. Let's put something, I would suggest let's vote on something and simply pass it. I would be willing to do all of that. But at least let's allow those people who are going to be impacted by the cuts, and I'm not just talking education, I'm talking the senior and disabled and the hungry in Oregon. You know, once again, we are the hungriest state in the nation. I don't think we say too much about that. I think we ought to allow people to make that decision if we don't have the courage to make it ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Recognize Senator Corcoran.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, colleagues, I ask you today to sustain the governor's veto of the ultimate gimmick, the shift. But in actuality, I'm raising the white flag. You Republicans have won. I doubt I can convince you to put aside your hatred of Dr. No, your relentless attacks on the governor, but my remarks and criticisms are for both parties. And with all due respect to my colleague from Ashland, the governor has not wavered from all through three special sessions with his pay-as-you-go mantra. On a side note, I would be surprised if we have enough votes to actually override these vetoes. After all, most of you Republicans actually voted against your own Republican leadership and against the very package whose vetoes you threatened to override today. But as one of my learned Republican colleagues said, consistency is the hobgoblin of the small mind. I rise to tell you that the Senate Democratic leadership has failed the citizens of Oregon. Democrats have lost their voice, that of the loyal opposition, by conspiring with the Republicans. Bleeding heart liberals, once again out to save the world, have made Oregon a worse place to live. One of our Republican Senate colleagues was bragging recently to a House Democrat that the Republicans have a win-win situation here. If we sustain the vetoes, the Republicans will blame the governor for the cuts to schools. If we override the vetoes, it will prove that the Democrats agree with the Republicans that this was the best we could do. Give me a break. If we sustain the governor's veto, even the august members of the Oregonian and Register Guard editorial boards agree, apparently no one in the state disagrees, that this is a bad budget. At least we could give Oregon voters a chance to weigh in on this. If the public doesn't want to pay for schools, for community colleges, for universities, for seniors, the disabled, kids at risk, then let them say so. But why not give them the chance? If anyone in this chamber thinks that it's politically feasible for the Republican leadership to underfund schools to the tune of $317 million if the vetoes are sustained, they're suffering from smoke inhalation. They're whistling through the graveyard, and they'll suffer even worse in November. Let me tell you, Oregonians are really mad at all of us right now, both parties. A recent poll of motivated voters in the Portland area, without partisan distinction, unilaterally condemned our legislature. Our approval rating was right down there with the Enron executives, only 20% approval. Not just Republicans, not just Democrats, it was a pox on both our houses. And Oregonians are right, we failed. I publicly criticized my own Democratic leadership for cooperating with the Republicans to produce a bad result. $600 million in one-time theft of every piggy bank in the state for one-time money to solve an $850 million shortfall is atrocious public policy. Partisanship aside, it leaves us with a huge hole in the next biennium. Even the Irish with their bad math skills know that this is a bogus business practice. If nothing else, I've been consistent in my criticism starting from the first special session. From the get-go, I've said this is a Republican problem. You've had 8 years of control of both chambers and have not produced a long-term solution to adequate education funding, from pre-kindergarten to community colleges to our universities. You failed to do this during the best economic times Oregon has ever seen. Now, during the worst of times, you seem incapable of solving this problem. From the first special session, I've insisted that Democrats should not supply the votes for bad public policy, a Republican plan that includes untenable cuts to seniors, the disabled, children at risk, working families, small businesses, and our education system, while granting corporate welfare tax breaks. Our Democratic leaders did it anyway. But as the bumper sticker says, that was then, this is now. With the vetoes before you, any hope of dealing realistically with the budget shortfall goes up in smoke along with the biscuit fire. $600 million in one-time theft. for one-time money to solve an $850 million shortfall is plainly a bad business practice. The voters know this, and now the voters will face a clone of the recently defeated ballot measure 13 in September, this being perhaps the most instructive example. Oregonians will be asked to sacrifice 7,000 need grants for income-eligible college kids to attend Oregon's public colleges and universities in exchange for a one-time payment to K-12. The Education Endowment Fund was originally placed in the Oregon Constitution by a former Senate president by the name of Gordon Smith, so that greedy legislators could not get their hands on the corpus of that fund the first time they needed it. The current Republican leaders ignored their own guy. What more can I say? Stealing from one group of Oregon citizens, our needy college students, for a one-time fix for another needy group, our K-12 students, is truly robbing Peter to pay Paul. The shift before you now is the best example of a bad business practice. Imagine employer A asking employer B if instead of making 8 payments this biennium, I only have to make 7, and I'll give you it a day late in the next biennium, but it may not be the same size as the payments I'm giving you now. What employer in the right mind would accept a deal like that? Yet that's what's being foisted on us today. The Republican leadership has proven itself fundamentally incapable of dealing with this problem during the best of times, and now they say they can't solve it in the worst of times. That really doesn't leave many alternatives now, does it, colleagues? If not you, who? If not now, when? I ask you for once to throw your partisan anger at the governor out the window and do what's right. Do what another Republican leader, Governor Vic Atiyah, did in an earlier economic crisis. Face the facts. Vic did it. Why can't you? Here are a few words from another former Republican, the tiger of the U.S. Senate, Wayne Morris. I have his words on a plaque in my office. I will exercise an independence of judgment based on the evidence of each issue. I will weigh the views of my constituents and party, but cast my vote free of political pressure and unmoved by threats of loss of political support. For one day, one vote, forget your partisan rancor, and forget the weak Democrats who sold out for an easy election year result. Veto the shift and veto the bonding. The Oregonian editorial board recently threw in with the right wing of the Oregon legislature, lamenting that the governor's final days seemed like a Shakespearean tragedy. Portland legislators should lead the way in voting to override the governor's budget vetoes or recommended. There's a Shakespearean tragedy here, but it's not of the governor's making. Here's a line from Shakespeare for you, from King Lear. We have seen the best of our times, machinations, hollowness, treachery, and all ruinous disorders follow us disquietly to our graves. Let's not be marked with this black spot on this legislative body. Let's do what's right.
Recognize Senator Harper.
Thank you, Mr. President. Let me quickly try and set the record straight from the good senator from Cottage Grove and from the rest of the body. The Senate president made a very sincere effort to approach the Senate with the idea of asking the voters to vote on increased taxes, not on the priorities of government. We have money to fund the priorities of government. We can fund education. We can fund public safety. We can fund taking care of those people that can't take care of ourselves. What we can't do in these economic times is fund everything. We cannot fund the priorities and the Cultural Trust Fund and the World Affairs Council and the left arm of the Tomahawk statue. We made a presentation or proposal to let the voters vote on that. We got turned down. The governor was in France, could not help us with this income tax referral, so it died. That offer is still good. If you'd like to ask the voters to fund some of those non-essential programs in government, I'd be happy to help. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Recognize Senator Troll.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this has been a difficult issue for all of us. I appreciate the debate we're having. I know as part of a coalition of voters, both Democrats and Republicans, I helped pass the plan that we put in effect after the last special session. I gave my votes to some things that I really was very uncomfortable with, quite frankly, but I did support it because we needed every vote we could get to do something to solve the problem. The things that I see in the plan that are problems for me include the shift, include the bonding, include taking money from endowment funds and redirecting them, and things like that. Things that really meant that we didn't deal with the problem as the governor presented it to us very early before the first session. He said, let's try to find solutions to this problem and pay as we go. If we have government programs that we don't want to fund, then we can cut them. If we want to have programs and we need the money, then we should try to raise it. Indeed, the advice to us from in the Constitution when we face similar situations like this is to find the additional revenue to pay for the programs that you want and need in this state. So I think the governor has been consistent. It's easy to criticize people. I criticize myself because I agreed with the governor. Let's not do this with gimmicks and band-aids. Let's not compound the problem for the next biennium, which is what we're doing by doing it that way, making it even more difficult to find a solution to the problem in the next biennium, having a tremendous deficit as we begin that biennium. We have not faced up to the issue. The governor, as he looked at what we did last time, I think was consistent with the advice he gave us right at the beginning. And we have tried to solve a unbalanced budget by using gimmicks, by using band-aids, by finding monies that are one-time monies that won't be there again to solve these problems, and we still have the problem of not enough money to fund these basic services, education being very important. So I'm going to support the governor. I think he's been consistent. I think he has the best interest of the state in mind, and so I will vote against. I will vote against overriding these vetoes.
Thank you, Senator. Recognize Senator Yee.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise to support governor's vetoes. I agree that balancing our budget by borrowing or accounting maneuvers is not good public policy. We need to resolve today's problems today, not borrow from the future or shift them to the next biennium. In fact, state revenue experts already warned that the budget for 2003 to 2005 may be $1.4 billion short of maintaining current program levels. Today, we have a $317 million shortfall as a result of the vetoes, plus a looming September revenue shortfall of approximately $200 million. I urge that we sustain the governor's vetoes and cut across the board 9.3% to make up for the $517 million shortfall and balance our budget. State agencies should be asked to cut non-essential services, reduce administrative costs, improve efficiencies, and do more with less. If we make agencies efficient and keep our taxes low, our economy will recover sooner. We are elected to make difficult decisions. It is our constitutional duty to balance the state's budget. We need to face our problems now, tighten our belts, and work doubly hard. I urge you to sustain the vetoes and reduce spending to balance the budget immediately. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Recognize Senator Fisher.
Yeah, I'll make my remarks short. Be interesting to look back a couple of sessions and see who encouraged bonding for schools and things like that, and all of a sudden it's not right. It'd be interesting to look back and see who's been encouraging us to spend more than we actually should be spending for the last three or four sessions leading up to this, including the very last one at the end of the year ago, July. And a short comment, a quote from Shakespeare for my colleague from Cottage Grove, "Methinkest thou protestest too much."
I recognize Senator Duncan.
Mr. President, colleagues, as I listened to the governor the other evening on television, as he went through each step, and I agreed with him completely. I think he's right on target. I think he has a message for the state that is very, very good. I think he has given an awareness to the problems that exist that maybe haven't been there for a long time. You know, it's not a new problem. I commented in our caucus this morning, I campaigned for state superintendent in 1974 to bring about a stable financing program for schools. I've been extremely successful through the years, it looks like, doesn't it? But anyhow, as I listened to that discussion, I'm in agreement with him. He's right. And there is a message for us. There is a message for the people of Oregon. But as I looked at the polls this morning, yesterday's Oregonian, the people want money for schools, except at this point they're not willing to pay for it. I think we have to continue to get the message to people. I'm not at the point where I'm saying we have to get to a crisis. I think I just can't make myself at this stage of the game when schools are ready to start in a couple of weeks. And I look at my own districts. I've gone around those districts. I've talked about it. It would be devastating, absolutely devastating. By the way, I recognize it could be devastating next year too. But I have to look at the immediate thing right now. And say, and I can certainly be virtuous right now because I'm not going to be here. You folks will have to solve that problem. And I recognize I'm listening to all the talk shows. The legislature ought to do this. The legislature ought to do that. We all know that's not going to happen unless the people really want it to happen. In this state, the legislative assembly cannot just put a mandate on the people. It has to come from the people. And so until the people are really ready, it won't happen. But I think we have to keep trying. And so I would commend the governor for the message. As I said, I agreed with him right down to the line of veto. I cannot create a crisis in my school systems, in my district right now, or I don't want it to happen in your district right now. I am going to vote, with all due respect to the governor and the message he's trying to give, I will vote to override.
Thank you, Senator. Recognize Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. President. Listening to my colleague from Ashland, it just reminds me again that there are people who are deeply committed to education on both sides of this issue. This is not about who cares most about education. This is about how we've gotten to this point and when do we put our foot down and say no. Like my colleague from Ashland, I come from a district, actually I come from two districts. I just got Tigard-Tualatin. That have a tradition of excellence going back many years of real effort to create a quality education system. When Measure 5 came along, everyone warned that quality would be eroded and eventually turned into mediocrity over the years. And unfortunately, despite the robust economy, we have seen that occur over the last 10 years. The impact was shielded by the good economy for a period of time, but we've seen a period with equalization and with the budget cuts that we've had to have of steady erosion of our commitment. We've seen class sizes increase. We've seen textbooks outdated. We still see textbooks where Ronald Reagan is president of the United States. We've seen schools go to a four-day week throughout Oregon. We've seen wonderful community schools close, which has all kinds of impact on neighborhood. We've seen this steady progression toward mediocrity. And it really reminds me of the story of the two frogs and the boiling water. If you throw a frog in boiling water, the frog jumps out. If you put a frog in cold water and gradually heat it up, then the frog will stay there till the frog boils to death because the increments are so gradual. This reminds me of that parable. And we have to, as leaders of our state, we have to decide at what point are we going to jump out of the pot before it is too late. The governor put his foot down and said, enough. I think it's legitimate to argue about the communication that took place, even the timing, but it really, for me, it boils down to an issue of conscience. At what point do we just say no to the gimmickry, to the flim-flam, to the throwing decisions about our children's future, to throwing the burden into the next generation of students? At what point do we say no? We either put our money into the process or we take the cuts and take the hits. We are being dishonest with this approach, in my view, and I say that collectively. We have all had a role in this. And I think it is time to stop, it is time to say no, and it is time to become accountable to our children and to the taxpayers of Oregon. Let's have some honesty in government. Let's either put in the money and support our children's education, or let's have the courage to make the cuts. I'm voting to sustain the governor's veto.
Thank you, Senator. Recognize Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a few minutes ago, I was back in the offices, and I was listening to what I thought was kind of an attack on the legislature, so I got some numbers, and I think everyone needs to think about this. For the 95-97 budget, the governor proposed for K-12 funding $3 billion. The legislature came in and added $500 million to his original proposal. For the 97-99, the governor came out with a proposal of $3.67 billion. The legislature came back in and did $4,355,000,000. 99-01, we had $4.57 billion proposed by the governor. The legislature, with the encouragement from the Coalition for School Funding Now and our friends and our neighbors and who are in the education profession, urged us to move that up to $4,811,000,000. Then this last session, the governor came out with his proposal. Basically, everyone had agreed that 5.2 was a reasonable number. Our coalitions said that was something they could live with and would sustain their costs. And so the legislature, again, stepped up to the plate, taking this budget from 95-97 of $3 billion proposed to $5.2 billion. Now, what I'm going to suggest to you now is you're hearing a different message, and that is from the Coalition for Overturning the Veto Now. And that needs to happen. We cannot face the idea of opening up these schools with 200 to 317 million missing from the budgets. So I'm going to urge you to repass Senate Bill 1022, notwithstanding the governor's veto. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Recognize Senator Menas.
Mr. President, members of the Senate stand supporting the overriding of the governor's veto for a number of different reasons, but I want to kind of reframe the discussion to some degree. We can talk about disingenuous arguments and what we should do and what's in the best interest of the state in terms of raising the people's taxes. We can talk about that a lot. And as Republicans and Democrats, since we're close to the elections, we can point fingers at each other and we can blame each other for all of that. But in my evolution as a legislator here, I came in as an arch conservative right winger and became over 20 years what I consider to be a very pragmatic person whose objective is to try to find solutions to problems. And we spent 3 weeks almost in a special session beating the daylights out of each other and trading barbs and shooting at each other and trying to get one-upsmanship in terms of who's the better supporter of education, et cetera. And Senator Metzger and I came up with an idea about using some bonding, and we came together in a coalition of Republicans and Democrats and came up with a series of bills that had been highly criticized by the media and others, who of course would like to raise the people's taxes in toto for a dedicated funding source for education. But the point I'm making is that we came up with a solution that worked for the time. Now, whether the Oregonian editorial page or board likes that or not, that's the reality of what we were able to accomplish here, and it did include bonding as an insurance policy because some of us forecasted that our economy was still not doing well. And it's truth that it's still not doing well. And I want to give you a little reality check, too. We're coming up on the anniversary of September 11th. Now, I hate to keep reminding people of this, but September 11th is a very significant date, not only in this nation, but in the world and in this state. Because what happened on September 11th, when certain individuals attacked the very symbol of our economic system, was to send the Oregon legislature into sessions just like this to try to determine how are we going to balance a budget in an economic environment that is declining rapidly. Now, I don't know who's trying to kid who here, but when I go out and talk to people who are unemployed and trying to find a job in my district, whether it's a Fujitsu employee who no longer has a job, whether it's somebody who was a prospect for working in the new DuPont photomask plant that they spent $56 million building and never opened because they didn't have the business, or LSI Corporation that had to slow down the adding of employees because the business wasn't there, or Boeing Corporation who's losing contracts to European airline manufacturers, etc. I don't know whose taxes it is that you people want to raise. I mean, I heard something about people who make over $200,000 a year. I don't know about you. I don't make over $200,000 a year. I don't know how many people in Oregon there are that do that. I don't think that if you suggested that that's the only group that you would raise taxes on, that somehow you're going to generate enough money to fill a $1.5 billion deficit in the state of Oregon. The bottom line is, if you're going to raise somebody's taxes, it's going to be the working class people of the state of Oregon, just like me, a Republican who goes to work every day, who's a member of a union perhaps, who works 8 hours a day, sometimes 10 hours a day, sometimes 16 hours a day, and in fact sometimes 20 hours a day as a detective, and you're going to raise my taxes. And I think the people of the state of Oregon will reject that. And I think it's, if you have a plain sense or keen sense for the obvious as a detective, you have to be able to see what's in front of you. And oftentimes, kid, as a detective, the plain sense for the obvious is the fact that the people of the state of Oregon are not going to buy an income tax increase. That is a fact. Now, you can send it out if you want. You can play that exercise. But I think the danger in that and the discussions that we had during the special session was that if you did that disingenuous sending out of a tax increase, what you do is you destroy the environment for any legitimate discussion during a regular session of any legitimate tax policy changes. Because you've already asked and answered the question, as lawyers will say, in a trial. It's been asked and answered. The people don't want it. You don't allow us to have a legitimate discussion. That's what the governor's done in vetoing these two measures. He set us up to have this discussion, to beat each other up, and to literally destroy the environment within which we were going to have, hopefully, a discussion about tax reform that may, in fact, be a solution to the problem. And he's divided us. And I would suggest that today, Democrats, Republicans, that we join together, notwithstanding the governor, and override the veto, and move on, because next session is where the real discussion is going to occur. And there's one other issue I want to bring up. This governor, with all due respect, is the author of the Oregon Health Plan, a good program. Everybody loves health care. In 1993, I chaired the Ways and Means Committee of the House. I was responsible for beginning to implement that program. I had reservations about it then in terms of its fiscal accountability. 10 years later, not one other state in this nation has followed Oregon behind the governor's plan for health care. Today, this plan spends over $300 million of your precious general fund dollars, more than it would cost to run the Medicaid program the other 49 states provide. So we can stand on the Senate floor, we can talk about funding education, and I'm more inclined to do that, and I'm better than you are on the education issue. We can play that bully thing, and I'm on top of the hill and you're not, et cetera, et cetera. The fact of the matter is, Oregon is paying for a health care program, a health care plan, that is spending over $300 million of general fund tax dollars that could be going to education for a failed health care system that not one other state in this nation has followed suit to implement. And I don't care who stands up here and says, I'm better than you on the education issue, and I've always supported education, et cetera. The fact of the matter is, if you do not override these vetoes, a Portland Public School District is going to take a $23 million reduction on top of a $30 million reduction, $36 million reduction. That's $59 million reductions in the Portland School District that's had a decline in enrollment from 80,000 students to about 50,000 students just within the last 7 to 8 years. Now, if you can live with that in your conscience, and if you want to carry the political debate, this political discussion, into the rhetoric that we're so good at, then continue and do what you do and support the governor.
Thank you, Senator. I recognize Senator Castillo.
Thank you, Mr. President. These are very difficult decisions that we are making today for all, every single one of us that is a member of this legislature. We have had a series of difficult decisions ever since Special Session 1, and they just seem to be getting worse. I rise as someone who has been a very strong supporter of our governor. He is a friend. He is someone who I find to be a very inspiring leader in the state of Oregon. He's one of the people that inspired me to want to get involved in politics and run for office. I love how he comes at public policy and thinks about how to help people in our state. So it is very difficult for me today to stand and not support our governor on this one. I cannot vote to sustain his veto because I cannot face what will happen to schools if we do sustain his veto. And I absolutely agree with our governor on all of the policy arguments he's making about why he has arrived at the decisions that he has made. And I applaud him and cheer him for being so adamant about that message and for pushing us to make better decisions about how we fund all of the services in our state and sounding the alarm that we all really need to be sounding and listening to and heeding to about our need to step up and find a better way to fund schools in our state and other important services that we all care about in our state. But I come to my decision based on what I've learned from my most recent campaign for superintendent of public instruction. And that is that I know that there are people all over Oregon who are ready to get engaged in a statewide effort to solve our school funding dilemma. People know that we do have a school funding crisis. And everywhere I went, whether I was talking with editorial boards, school board members, parents, business leaders, people said, we absolutely have to solve this. And we are ready to get engaged in a statewide effort to solve this. So we don't have to do this to schools at this moment. We do have an opportunity for all of us to work on a statewide effort to solve our school funding problem. We don't have to take the measures that the governor is asking us to take and put our schools in a horrible, horrible situation just a few weeks away from the beginning of the next school year. The good senator from Portland laid out the scenario for what has been happening over the last decade with school funding and what so many districts across the state are facing. They have been cutting and cutting and cutting. And if we sustain these vetoes, they are going to have to make some very, very serious, horrible decisions about how they grapple with that shortfall of funding in this next school year. The timing of when this comes is the other factor involved here. They don't have time to really react to this in a way, in the best way possible because it's such a short timeline. We put them in just a horrible position, and they are asking all of us to please not do this to the children of our state. So I am asking my colleagues to please not do this to the children of our state. Let's all overturn these vetoes, roll up our sleeves, and get to work on a stable, adequate funding plan for our schools and for other important services in our state. It is very sad to me that we are even here today having this discussion, but I know, based on my most recent experience, that people all across Oregon are ready to fight for their schools and to solve our school funding crisis, and I am encouraged by the level of concern and commitment and focus that people all across our state have right now about our public schools. They know that if we don't step up and take care of our schools, then we're not taking care of the future of Oregon. And people are engaged in this discussion all over Oregon. This is a time for us to pull together and work on a solution, and I believe it's possible. I am optimistic, and I am willing to help in that effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Recognize Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we've heard the veto message from the chief executive of the state of Oregon, and I, for one, agree with him that these bills, when passed out of this legislature, represent poor public policy. And as a matter of fact, here are a few more examples of poor public policy. Our failure to deal with the PERS issue, $8 billion of unfunded mandate. Our colleague from Portland talked about the unsustainability of the Oregon Health Plan. He's right. It's unsustainable with the additions that have been made and in its current configuration. The cost of health care in general, poverty and hunger, especially in rural areas where the economy is far worse and less sustainable than it is in the urban areas. We have tried to dedicate funding in K-12. We tried to build a firewall between K-12 education funding and cuts. Most of us have indicated our desire to make sure that K-12 education is fully funding. And I believe that this legislature will, in fact, find a way to build a firewall in the general fund budget so that we can fund K-12 fully without seeing an erosion of other essential state services. But the question that we're asked to deal with today is about K-12 funding and higher education community colleges, not about the other public policy issues. But colleagues, they're related. They are absolutely connected. One third of every dollar that we put into education by the 2003 session will go to the unfunded mandate for PERS. And so you cannot find a mechanism to fully fund and stably fund and reliably fund education without having dealt with the PERS issue. It's impossible. And these are sweeping changes, restructuring Oregon's tax structure, dealing with PERS, dealing with the Oregon Health Plan, dealing with rural economic revitalization are sweeping and thoroughgoing changes. We're not going to deal with them in a special session, nor should we. Somebody suggested this was a Band-Aid approach. I agree with that. It is a Band-Aid approach. And here's the reality. If we fail to apply this Band-Aid, if we vote in this chamber today to sustain these vetoes, then coming soon to a school district near you will be the 4-day school week that we've been living with in Eastern Oregon for 4 years. And if that's the kind of schools that you will be forced to live with in the urban areas, I think you'll be pretty amazed at the disruption that a 4-day school week would have in the urban area for childcare, transportation systems, and the quality of education. But when asked, most Oregonians have said they don't want to make their state number one in reliance on personal income taxes. And nobody should be under any misapprehension. If we sustain these vetoes, we're going to be back here looking at a referral on some kind of a tax restructuring to find a, quote, stable source for school funding. And we're still not going to be asked to deal with PERS, the Oregon Health Plan, the cost of health care, poverty and hunger, rural economic revitalization. So we're focusing on this issue as if it were in a vacuum, and it is connected. I agree with my colleagues who have tried to put forth an argument for the override of this veto that doesn't point fingers at the governor, or point fingers at the legislative leadership, or the minority leader, or the parties. To misquote President Clinton, it's this stupid economy. It's not the economy, stupid. I said I would misquote the president. It's this stupid economy that disempowers rural Oregon, disempowers inner city Oregon, disequitably distributes opportunity to the rural areas that used to carry their own weight in school funding through forest practices, used to have manufacturing jobs, used to not be the epicenter of unemployment and poverty and hunger, used to carry their own weight and contribute to Oregon's economy. And I'm afraid that is also a public policy issue we will not solve in this special session. But what we can do is keep our schools from imploding with an override on this pair of vetoes. We can move into September with certainty, which is what I think we owe those kids and those administrators that have watched in agony as this legislature has failed to cooperate. I'll remind the senator from Cottage Grove that while we have held in the Republican Party the leadership of both houses, there has been another executive with whom we seem not to have been able to cooperate. And I'm not sure which direction that street runs. But rather than go into the blaming, the naming of blame, the point is we're not going to deal with these sweeping issues in a special session. We have the opportunity before us to avoid a train wreck in public education, which will happen imminently. I don't really care what the polls say, but the prospects for passing an increased tax, a surcharge on income, are pretty low in my communities. So I will ask my colleagues here, understand it's a Band-Aid, vote to override this veto, move us out of this area of constant wrangling, and let's look forward to the public policy issues that unless we focus on those and deal with those, they will concern this state. Mr. President, I appreciate your indulgence. I think we should get on with the business at hand, override these vetoes. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I would announce that Senator Brown yielded time for Senator Corcoran, Senator Atkinson yielded for Senator Menis, and Senator Harper for Ferrioli. Recognize Senator Shields.
Thank you, Mr. President. The word I have this morning is the word ambivalent. There is no good vote on this override as far as I'm concerned. Whether you're a yes on the override or a no, there's no good vote. Just a painful one. It really is. I mean, this is so painful for me. I wanted to back us up a minute. I went back east to visit my father recently, and I was visiting a friend in the hospital, and I just want to show my colleagues a little toy I brought back. I picked this up in a hospital waiting room, and it pretty much tells me what the public thinks of politicians. This is called Politicians in a Sack. I mean, it's a kind of a funny caricature of us, and I think all of us could visualize ourselves being the one in the sack, the neckties hanging out, a flag where his head ought to be, a fistful of bucks, because that's part of the stereotype. If you squeeze this critter, you'll get all kinds of funny comments out of current and former presidents and so on. But that's the way we are. There have been quotes about our credibility, and I think most people want to put most of us in sacks somewhere because we keep screwing up. And I was on the floor talking about how much we'd screwed up during those various special sessions, and the governor is right on the policy. We should be paying as we go. These are crazy situations. But Wednesday night this week, in spite of being back east, I participated in the Mount Hood Community College Board meeting. I'm a member of that board. And so I don't just sit here in the legislature and do policy that doesn't seem to... I get to go back and sit on a local Mount Hood Community College Board and see what we do and see what it does at the local level. In their budget this year, in previous board meetings, we had already this year cut $2.7 million out of Mount Hood's budget. We had squeezed every penny. We never had a big, rich budget in the first place, but we did all this cutting earlier this year, and we came in Wednesday night, and again, it was sweat, it was blood, it was hurt, it was pain. We directed that another $5.7 million be cut out of that community college budget. And the reason was that we can't wait for the outcome of this vote today. Our schedule called us to move forward, and so we had to make that cut. Maybe some things will be restored. But we were talking about the faculty who are going to be laid off. We were talking about the staff that were going to be laid off. But that's not the real issue. It really isn't. Because the real issue is the opportunity that ends up being denied to people that are using that community college. And I'm talking in my situation about people in East County that are trying to better themselves. I'm talking about fathers and mothers that are working full-time jobs and they've got their kids in public schools and they are going back to community college to try and better themselves, and on and on and on. It was so painful Wednesday night. But we did it. We had to do those cuts because of the economy. With my vote this morning comes a demand that we reform this system. There's lots of suggestions have been thrown out. Believe me, I know there will be lots of roadblocks. I wish we had a plan right now for a permanent solution. I do not believe we have one, nor can we get one in a fourth or a fifth special session before this general election. It won't happen. And so we've got a situation here that just is nothing but painful. Either you're going to be wrong on the policy or you're going to be wrong on the outcome. What a choice. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. I recognize Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, the discussion today has been very good. I know we have all agonized over this personally and together, and today now on the floor. And as I analyzed all the possibilities, all the negativities, looking at the possible outcomes, I think it boiled down to one question, at least one question for me, and that was, am I willing to sacrifice this year's kids? That's really the question before us today. Are we willing to sacrifice this year's kids? You know, we're not paying the price. You know, the Coalition for School Funding isn't paying the price. Administrators aren't paying the price. You know, we're adults. We're expected to adjust. Kids don't have that vote. Kids don't have that option. Do we need to do better long-term? Absolutely. Are our choices now severely limited? Absolutely. And perhaps out of that crisis will, in fact, come the solution, and I do believe it will. But I go back to my original question, do we sacrifice this year's kids? Even if you look at what the governor has proposed, an income tax surcharge, it sacrifices this year's kids. It's too late. When this gavel falls today, if we fail to override, this year's kids are sacrificed. That would be forthcoming for the next year or the next year after that, perhaps. And again, that is a temporary solution. It is not a permanent funding solution for kids. And I think if you narrow the debate to that and look at, am I willing to do that to kids, my answer is no. I won't do that. Do we need to find a permanent solution? Absolutely. I believe that will happen. Even if you despise this shift, which I do, the fact of the matter is it will allow the certainty and it will allow our kids to be able to partake of the opportunity, as the senator from Southeast Portland said, in 2.5 weeks. We'll be convening again in January. And the fact of the matter is between from now until June, we can even reverse this decision if we find a different mechanism for funding schools. The shift does not have to take place in June if we, between now and then, come up with another alternative. But if we fail to provide that today, then we have sacrificed this year's kids, and there's no going back. We put ourselves in a situation in which we have to do more for Oregon. And I think that's, in one respect, a very good position. It's about time we did. Let's not sacrifice this year's kids. Why we do that? And I will reluctantly be voting to override the governor's veto, not because I disagree with the policy, but because I'm not willing to sacrifice this year's kids, knowing we need both short-term and long-term, we better get at it. It's our responsibility. We've got to do it. Let's don't make the sacrifice now for them. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I recognize Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would suggest that in a $12 billion budget, we have enough money for K through 12 education. In the discussion about a stable funding source, we have one. It's the income tax. And over the past 8 years, it has raised record amounts of money for our Treasury. What we need to do in the next session, quite frankly, is secure a responsible amount for K through 12 education early, safeguard it, secure it, and then do what we really aren't doing in this kind of discussion or in so many of the print media I see. This isn't about kids and education versus the need for new revenue. This is about the other $6 billion that we spend. Every other program competes for money with education, but we don't look at it that way. We look at everything on an individual basis, and we siphon it over here, and we give it away over there, and then we say, oh my gosh, we don't have enough. It reminds me, frankly, a little bit of the current Blazer payroll. If they wanted to acquire some really good player right now, they'd have to say, well, we just can't pay him enough, even though they're approaching a $100 million payroll. Well, why is that? Well, I suppose maybe it's because you're paying, and with all due respect to Sean Kemp, $16 million a year, Damon Stoudemire, $13 million a year. Maybe what you have to do is invest your more significant contributions in players that will do you some good. Just as we need to step up, invest more money in education, and take a hard look at other expenditures. OLCC, OPB, DMV, DEQ, Cultural Trust, SimCam, the out-of-control health plan. Those are the places we need to have the review. The senator from Albany suggested we take a hard look at the Economic Development Department, that fine group that's led us to the highest unemployment rate in the country. We need to reward them with more money, don't we? We spent money over the past 8 years as if there was no tomorrow. Well, tomorrow's here, and we need to deal with that, just like the people outside of this building. They don't go around and scream that, gee, we need more money. We got to continue to spend as we used to spend before either we got laid off or, as the senator from John Day said, we got hit by a recession. That changes things. As many of you know, my oldest brother goes around and tries to help corporations that are having a real problem. He's currently the chairman of Bethlehem Steel. What did he do about a month after he got there? They filed bankruptcy. And Chapter 11, what do you call that? Reorganization, restructuring. That's what we need to do. We're not bankrupt because we have a steady supply of revenue coming in, but we do need to take a look internally at our operation and see whether or not we continue to afford everything we've been sprinkling money on. I mean, the citizens of Oregon need to know that over the past four sessions, we grew our government about 15% each and every time. We grew it to a rate that was unsustainable if that dark day ever came. And it came. So we can't just pretend like everything's as it was. We have to take a look at real fundamental priorities. You all may recall there was a discussion about where to locate a prison a few years back. Well, we went, apparently, with the governor's decision, even though it cost us $100 million more than it needed to, because of the policy consideration to make sure that we inconvenience people in certain areas with felons. Even though we had a willing community in Umatilla that wanted to house these people for economic development, we felt on a policy basis, irrespective of the additional costs, well, gosh, that would be a great place to house these people. We shouldn't have made that decision. And we can't continue to make decisions like that without light of the economic circumstance and the consequence of those kinds of decisions. So I hope that we will override these vetoes, help our kids. As the senator from Welch has said, this is about the kids who are going to school here in the next 2.5 weeks, of which I have a daughter. So I will plead that it's in my selfish interest to make sure that the budget of the West Lynn Wilsonville School District is more sound than it would be if we adopted the irrational approach of the chief executive and dumped this huge shortfall on education. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. It would announce that a change on Ferrioli's yield, it was Measurely, and Senator Beyer yielded for Senator Miller. If there's no further discussion, Senator Hannon, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. President, members, I think we've had a good, thorough discussion of what the clear delineation of the issues are. We do not have a package before us of alternatives. We do have an override before us, and that's what this vote is about. I think it's good that we have been able to air some of these issues. But more importantly, Mr. President, I would like to see the governor, the speaker of the House, the Senate president, immediately appoint a citizens task force to start to work. If you recall, I asked this in the last special session. We're down the road 6 weeks later, and nothing has happened. I would like to see us begin immediately the dialogue that the governor has said we need to have. Let him take his dialogue out to the public, and let's work on a plan. Let's not wait till January 2003 and say, uh-oh, we got to come up with a plan. We got to save schools. We can do it now. If we're serious about doing it, let's do it now. Let's override this veto. Let's get the business done. Let's open schools in 2.5 weeks. I would urge your yes vote. Mr. President, I would ask for a call to the Senate.
Senator Hannon demands a call of the House, is joined by Senator Brown and Senator Atkinson. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, and the sergeant of arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson, Beyer, Beyer, Brown, Burdick, Carter, Carter, Castillo, Calarno, Corcoran, Corcoran, Courtney, Deckert, Dukes, Duncan, Ferrioli, Fisher, George, Gordley, Hannon, Harper, Hartung, Meserly, Metzger, Miller, Minnis, Morissette, Nelson, Shields, Starr, Tro, Yee, President Erfler, not answering, Carter.
Everyone required to be here is here. The question on rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1022. Okay, the clerk has asked that we be quiet so you can listen to what's taking place. Those are the opinions that the bill should be repassed. The answer aye is, your names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Brown.
Aye.
Burdick.
Aye.
Carter.
Aye.
Castillo.
Aye.
Clarno.
Aye.
Corcoran.
No.
Courtney.
Yes.
Deckard.
Aye.
Dukes.
Aye.
Duncan.
Aye.
Ferrioli.
Aye.
Fisher.
Aye.
George. Gordley, Hannon,
aye.
Harper,
aye.
Hartung,
aye.
Metzgerly,
aye.
Metzger,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Minnis,
aye.
Morissette,
aye.
Nelson, Shields,
aye.
Starr,
aye.
Tro,
no.
Yee,
no.
Atkinson,
aye.
Beyer,
President Erfler.
Excused, Gordley, Nelson, Bodino, Burdick, Corcoran, Deckert, Morissette, Tro, Yee, 22 ayes.
Senate Bill 1022 having received the required two-thirds majority declared passed, repassed, excuse me. Actions on executive appointments requiring Senate confirmation, messages from the House.
Mr. President, I'm directed by the Speaker to inform you that the House is organized and is ready for business of the fourth special session of the 71st Legislative Assembly.
Introductions of first reading of Senate measures, SR 18.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 18, adjourning signing day, fourth special session of the 71st Legislative Assembly.
Referred to the Special Committee on Government Affairs, and if that committee wishes to meet, to Senator Clarno. Does your committee wish to meet on the signee die? Not yet. Okay, we're going to stand at ease for a bit here. We request that you not leave the premises until we kind of find out where the house is so that we can continue on the process if we can. The report is that the House expects to have something over to us by 11, or we should have a status report, but they're not going to get it to us. So let's go into recess until 11. I don't intend that we're going to stay in session all day long. If they can't reach an agreement, we may go ahead and finish up our business and go home. But we'll give them a little bit of time yet to see what they're going to do. So we'll come back in at 11.